Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Japan's greatest victory and Britain's worst defeat, the capture of Singapore in 1942, a book by the person who masterminded it all, Colonel Mansubu Tsuji. We reach now after they've smashed the Jicho line and got all the British supplies living up well. Churchill's supplies, chapter 21. Alora Star is the centre of the Qatar province. It should have been well worth fighting for, but the enemy was so centred on was also the centre of defences of northern Malaya, but the nearby Jicho line, which should have held for 3 months, collapsed within 15 hours, so the delays in our advance were transitory. Even the bridges across the large river flowing to the north of Sata Loristar, because of incomplete demolition, were crossed by our motor cars in less than an hour. We pushed forward in the advance party, heading towards a large paved aerodrome, which I observed during my trip in the Crescent Plain before the outbreak of hostilities, and unexpectedly found that it was scarcely damaged. Here was a gift of bombs piled high, and moreover, in one building, hot soup was arranged on the dining room table. Among the surrounding rubber trees, 1,000 drums of full high-grade 92-octane petrol piled up. About noon that day, our plane successfully made the first landing at Alora Star. Completing their preparations that evening, one squadron of fighter planes and one squadron of light bombers pushed forward and carried further our brief attack over the heads of the retreating enemy, using the enemy's abandoned gasolines and bombs. They actually bombed with the British bombs. Our fighter groups, who had risked their lives protecting our convoy ships, were the most acceptable gifts. When Major General Kamara arrived in the city of Alora Star, the enemy, who had been slow to escape, were firing from houses everywhere, shooting from second-story windows. Mopping up was proceeding through the town. Standing at the street corner in the dead of night amongst flung bullets, Major Kamara, hardly pausing for breath, urged his troops, "To the south, to the south." But he was taking a risk. There was a road bridge, a railway bridge, across the large river flowing the southern side of the city. We attempted to seize before the enemy could destroy them. A daring raid by a party of 11 men under Lieutenant Lassie attacked the road bridge. Riding in sidecars, they pushed ahead of the infantry and arrived at the bridge at 10:10 a.m. on the 13th of December. Under heavy fire, with Corporals Kanika and Nakayama, the lieutenant immediately charged across the southern end of the bridge. They cut the electric wires leading to demolition charges with their sabres. Just as they did so, there was a tremendous roar. The whole bridge and fragments flew into the air. All that was left was the remainder of the bridge foundations. Corporal Samuel penetrated the enemy lines on the south side of the bridge, killed a number of men, but they were outnumbered, and Nakama was killed and Kamiru wounded. The enemy, perhaps expecting an immediate attack in a greater strength, stampeded and retreated to the south. Oh, two men! Oh, my God! Another raiding unit moving abreast of SA patrol proceeded to attack the railway bridge under up the river. By great fortune, they were able to make a perfect seizure and cut the electric wires before the demolition charges exploded. By spreading thick boards along the bridge decking, it was possible for motor cars to cross the bridge soon after. A subsequent pursuit made great gains, but high-speed assaults on Taiping and Sungi Panti, the four large military aerodromes in the Qatar province, were captured almost undamaged. We were able to repair them and put up them to use in half a day. We call these the Churchill aerodromes. They were provided with abundant equipment, ammunition, full provisions, and they were pleasantly surprised. A hurried constructed air base on the southern Indochina could not compare with the equipment and the new airfields. Possession of the twofold numerically air strength was one reason our superiority of the Malayan theatre of operations. But the decisive factor was that we were able to make immediate advantage of the captured Churchill aerodromes. Chapter 22. Advancing with the calendar. The day after the capture of Alora Star, Army headquarters moved into the city. It was barely 4 days since we left Singora, but it seemed a long time. Extending a heavy hand, General Mishita said, quote, "Thanks for your trouble. You have done well." The fat controller, and he was good enough to entertain us hospitably. We forgot the fatigue for several days, unceasing activity, and our tears flowed. The face of the second lieutenant Otto, who had been apologized by saying, "There is no excuse for me making a mistake, the enemy's movements," and that of Siki, the detachment commander, as excitedly explained, already is the end, it is the end, floated before my eyes. It was our thanks to the revered victims. Staff Officer Hongo, who had sprained an ankle when disembarking, had not received any medical treatment. Now getting about with the aid of a pine walking stick, he hobbled along the head of the railway unit, hastening repairs of the line where it had been smashed. The young officer, Kuniki, who had carried out the attacks with the small boats along the west of the coast of Malaya, successfully prepared to transport up by road and rail to Lorastar for the motorboats, which we had landed Segura. Staff Officer Aseda was fighting in the jungle with the Anando detachment. Staff Officers Sugita and Hatashi were making desperate efforts to ascertain the enemy's position by interrogating prisoners of war and inspecting captured documents. Thereupon, avoiding any interference in matters which concerned the staff officer in charge of operations, they drew up an operational plan which worked perfectly like a cogwheel of a watch. Basing their ideas on experience, they modified a section of the operational plan approved by the army commander and suggested the following 5 point of action. Oh no, jeez, Japanese. Oh god. 1. The main strength of the Imperial Guards Division and the 5th Division would rapidly push towards Perak River, while a section of the 5th Division seizing Padang, preparation for the seizure of Kuala Lumpur, would next be made. 2. Takumi detachment would rapidly as possible capture the Kutan, moving overland and putting all aerodromes to work in order to move towards Jemma and Kuala Lumpur. If the situation so required, the detachment would be reinforced by two additional infantry battalions from the 18th Division landing at Kutan. I'll tell you what, the Australians fought tirelessly against the Japanese, and they had learnt from their mistakes, the British mistakes, and they were really hard to displace. God. Okay. 3. Headquarters and the remaining units of the 8th Division would be landed in the neighbourhood of Messing and cut off the retreat of the enemy. 4. To the south of Kuala Lumpur, the Imperial Guards Division, the 5th Division, and the 2nd Command would attack the main enemy forces retiring from the north on towards and isolate them from Singapore. 5. The Imperial Guards Division, the 5th Division, and the 8th Division would assault and swiftly occupy Singapore. Oh, God. While painstaking picturing the strength of the enemy to encounter and the extent of demolition to be expected, the time necessary to repair road bridges and railway topographic features and probable enemy defence division, our own strength of attack, I made the entry into my diary of the anticipated date, crossing the Padang River approximately 15th of December, occupation of Kuala Lumpur, 14th or 15th of January, arrival at Johor Bahru, 31st of January, occupation of Singapore, 11th of February, the anniversary of the coronation of the Emperor Jimmu, 660 BC. My godfather, that's insane. So our subsequent progress demonstrated the forecast almost hit the mark. Kuala Lumpur was occupied a little earlier, and the reduction of Singapore was 4 days behind the date estimated. The paper plan was realised almost as if the pages had been torn off the calendar. Our success was unsurpassed pleasure, but the making of that calendar was the task so laborious that it might have been engraved in my bones. Fully recognising the fighting power of the enemy, we had to reanalyse our effective strength. Our plan to capture such an important enemy position such as Singapore on the anniversary of the coronation of Emperor Jimmu was made precedent as the whole Japanese army, yet subsequently on battlefields other than those of Malaya, attempts were made to repeat our performance without due regard for the condition of the frontline troops concerned. For example, of failure were not few. One conspicuous case is the failure of operation against the Impal in the Burma theatre. Staff there did not recognise it carefully, and working only on academic desk plan, they pushed forward their front line without proper penetration to capture well-fortified positions of Imperial. The anniversary of the Emperor's birthday, the attack was a complete failure. Oh, gee. To believe the divine wind, kamikaze, a typhoon in 1281, destroyed the fleet of the Mongol Emperor Kublai Khan, foiling the invasion plan of Japan. Will always blow for us on the national celebration day is the desecration of the gods. The Okanabe detachment, 21st Infantry Regiment, took over from a Saki detachment and led the 5th Division in pursuit of the retreating enemy, and pressed hard on the heels of the next 24 hours, never slackening pressure. The head of the column arrived at Gurun and they found the enemy strongly entrenched there. Gurun was held by the 6th and 8th Gurkhas Brigade and the 15th in reserve. The position was more easily defended and more difficult to attack than Jitra. In front of the position was a wide expanse of paddy fields, affording excellent field for the fire of an enemy. Only one road passed through the area. At the enemy defeat at Jitra, we expected desperate resistance, believing the enemy had been strongly reinforced with newly arrived troops. On the afternoon of the 13th, fierce fighting commenced, and by the evening it appeared as if the enemy were not going to be easily driven from position. A frontline battalion was fighting a bitterly contested battle. It was the commander, Major Kobe Shahashi, an old classmate of Maine, whom I have mentioned, I had met again the morning of the Singora landing. In the dead of night, Major General Kamaraja, the brigade commander, gave me the use of a car to observe the night raid. Remember night raids? He and I hurried to the front line and ran into the enemy shell fire, which was concentrated on the road. We stopped and jumped out. In my mind was the fear that the brigade commander might be injured. After taking cover in the ditch by the roadside for some time, we again returned to the car. There, amid the flashes from bursting shells, which dazzled us, and the noise of explosions that shook the ground, I suddenly felt as if I had been stabbed in the buttocks with the burning chopsticks. How do you do, chopsticks? Blood poured down my thigh and began to seep through my trousers. The stains, which looked like black in the moonlight, gradually spread. The wound was the soft part of my soft part and bled freely. No bones appeared damaged. The wound was slight, but it was not in a good area. I felt small while being bandaged. My degrees pressure of the bandage on the wound stopped the flow by degrees. It was the fourth time I had been wounded since my first battle. As time passed, the blood congealed, my trousers became stiff. Next morning, we began to advance on foot. I felt pain as if I was being stabbed on the right side of my heel. Pulling off my long boots to investigate, I found a shell splinter in my toe. The blood had oozed and stiffened like starch, causing the boot leather to cut into my foot above my heel as I walked. On the early morning of the 14th, we penetrated the important crossroad. At this place, vast quantities of munitions had piled up like mountains on the roadside. Every truck laden with provisions stood abandoned as if to welcome an army. Sitting in the first vehicle, grasping the steering wheel, was a corpse of an English officer, the top of whom's head had been cut off by a shell. The group of Indian soldiers had been taken prisoners were sitting around the circle, smiling and chattering. Then a European officer also taken prisoners, came along. He was the second lieutenant. At the sight of him, 40 or 50 Indian soldiers with solemn expression instantly sprang up and courteously saluted him. Was the dignity of the Englishman who confronted the Indian soldiers that a stronger man? That instinct of standing up and saluting, which manifested itself even in the backwash of the battlefield, made the Indians seem like slaves. Thinking I would like to thank my old classmate, Major Kaboshi, who had been fighting desperately from yesterday through the morning, I inquired for him at his battalion. I found him stretched out on a 6-foot bench, sleeping as if he were dead. It would be a shame to wake him. From my wallet, I took some tobacco and placed it quietly on his head. Then, driving away his car, I hurried to the head of this unit, which was attacking alternately at the Kabushi battalion. Here we secured booty, cars for driving purposes, liberal provisions of gasoline. The Churchill supplies included tinned food, bread. At the moment, it was not convenient to stop for a meal. Just read here the capture. Oh, yes, the capture of Penang. This is capture 23, so we're beginning to make an advance. The island of Penang, the capture of Penang, chapter 23. The island of Penang was not only a commercial centre, but it was also the fortress second only to Singapore. Even though its defences were incomplete, we believed they were powerful. Our first operation plan provided that Penang should be captured by a regiment of the 5th Division, which was still in Shanghai at the time of the Singapore landing. If the reinforcements from Britain arrived at the right time, the enemy counterattacked from Penang, it would be impossible for them to delay our thrust towards Singapore. Also, with an aggressive enemy holding the island, there would have to be a constant threat to our communications between North and South. From the point of view of caution, it is therefore common sense to safeguard the rear of the capturing Penang in the first stage of the operation. If we advance southwards without taking Penang, but only glaring sideways to speak, we would always be worried about the enemy make a plunge dagger into our flank. The day was unexpectedly broke. We unexpectedly broke through Jitra. A full-strength air attack was made on the island. From the southern Indochina Air Force set out to dive-bomb the enemy shipping moored at Georgetown Harbour and burned and destroyed a great part of the port. We destroyed the Jitra line and entered Alor like a tidal wave. According to Malaysian refugees who had fled there after the bombing of Penang, the Garrison Island Star, the 4th 5th Penjam Garrison Penang, which had been withdrawn to the mainland, part of it was used to advance to the ledge across the Thai frontier, the remainder to reinforce the 15th Division after the losses at Jitra. Withdrawn from Penang with morale good, it had panicked on the receipt of the news of, oh God, the crushing of the defeat of Jitra. It was therefore not difficult to imagine that the British had given a heavy blow that they would remember. We would not miss the golden opportunity, and the 5th Division decided to send the Kosher Battalion with a battery of artillery and a section of engineers to launch a surprise attack on Penang. Just odd division. The 15th of December, it was an early morning. Using boats found locally, they made a surprise landing and took possession of the whole island without losing one man. The men of the garrison had moved out to Jitra and elsewhere, had learned of the defeat of their main forces there, were completely exhausted on a return to the old spider's web, which the defence panel appeared to be, and they were welcomed by the Japanese flag flying on the wharf. The capture of Penang was an important supplementary gain to an overwhelming victory of Jitra, and definitely removed the greatest obstacle in our way for the scheduled advance. Penang Island is beautiful as a painting. Its coconut trees and betel palms on the sandy beach. The centre of the island is Malaya's most notable scenic spot, about 2,700 feet above sea level, in the Buddhist Paradise Temple. The tablet that has been signed years ago by Admiral Togo and General Nogi while touring the temple still hung as if to welcome our troops. Well, there you go. 16 minutes in, and we're into question chapter 24, page 113. And God Farmer, this goes on. It's the most depressing book I have ever warning against celebration. Oh my God. And then we get onto this most classic book about how the Japanese are going to ingratiate themselves to Southeast Asia. It's really great. But thanks a lot for listening. I'll continue to read this. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.